Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Jill Kaufman. More than a century ago, the American Psychological Association was founded in Worcester, Massachusetts, with the lofty goal to use psychology to benefit society and improve people's lives. But these days, the APA is struggling to explain how it strayed so far from that noble mission.
A new report alleges that in the wake of the 9/11 attack, some of the organization's top leaders deliberately relaxed APA ethics guidelines to allow psychologists to take part in coercive interrogation programs, otherwise known as torture, carried out by the Bush administration.
In a few minutes, we'll hear from Nathaniel Raymond, a human rights investigator at the Harvard School of Public Health. He pushed hard to expose the APA's collaboration with the Pentagon and involvement with torture.
But first, let's hear from Nadine Kaslow, past president of the APA, who was on the committee in charge of the review known as the Hoffman Report. Among its findings, that APA officials colluded with the Pentagon to loosen ethical guidelines so that psychologists could take part in coercive interrogations at Guantanamo Bay and elsewhere.
I was and still am extremely disturbed by these findings, very troubled by them, and feel very apologetic for the actions that occurred, for the lack of independence from government influence, and the resulting policies that were detailed in Mr. Hoffman's report.
Now, the APA has been denying these allegations for many years. Why? Can you explain that?
Well, that's clearly something we're trying to figure out, but I think that the allegations were so discrepant from what most of us hold to be our ethical obligations and our focus on human rights that it seemed almost impossible to many people that this could have been the case.
Well, given this report, and you know, and I don't mean to hammer away at this, but it is shocking. I mean, the APA was founded in Worcester, Mass, 123 years ago with the mission to benefit society and improve people's lives. You know, how do you explain how the APA strayed so far from that mission?
Well, first of all, I want to say that I think it was a small part of the APA that strayed from that mission, and much of APA was very firm and clear in saying that torture was absolutely unacceptable. So I think that, unfortunately, we didn't realize that there was sort of an underbelly, a small underbelly, that was having, as you said, loose ethical guidelines that may have allowed for psychologists to engage in enhanced interrogation.
Mm. Can you explain the part of the report that found this? Part of it said that the APA was mostly interested, or a part of the APA was mostly interested in currying favor with the Pentagon that sort of led to the loosening of these guidelines. Can you explain that? In what way did they want to curry favor with the Pentagon, and why?
Well, so this is actually not totally clear in the report, I don't believe, which I think is why you're asking the question. But it's my sense that there was a belief that psychologists have a very important role in the military, which indeed I think is true, and that having a good relationship with the DOD would allow psychologists to use many of the strengths and important things that they have to offer. Unfortunately, this also led to some serious problems as well.
Mm. Now, the association has fired its longstanding ethics director. This is Dr. Stephen Behnke. He's a part-time medical ethicist at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center here in Boston. He issued a statement through former FBI Director Louis Freeh that said, "It is unconscionable that the APA would take action against Dr. Behnke on the basis of allegations that are fraught with defamatory material." What's your response to that?
Well, my response to that is that I think the report was clear and that the facts of the report speak for themselves on this matter.
I mean, I guess that statement on behalf of Dr. Behnke implies that he feels he's being scapegoated by the APA. And he says he will consider all legal options. So it sounds like he's planning to sue the APA for defamation, among other things. Is the APA ready for that?
Well, obviously, I think whenever you take actions, you have to recognize at an organizational level that there may be lawsuits that ensue. And I think that the report, you know, in terms of the issue of Dr. Behnke being a scapegoat, I think that the report goes into exhaustive detail about Dr. Behnke's role And the facts really do speak for themselves, and I'm not going to characterize his activities beyond what's said in the report.
Yeah. Members of the APA have expressed a lot of shock and actual shame. You alluded to that at the top of this interview, and I just want to read you something that Jane Darwin wrote in the Boston Globe. She's the past president of the APA's Division of Psychoanalysis. She teaches ethics at the Mass Institute of Psychoanalysis. She wrote recently in the Globe, "This stain on our profession comes not from insufficient education on ethics, but from a governance system that gave too much power to too few people." Do you agree with that? Is she right? And will this report result in a fix to that governance system?
Well, I do believe that the report demonstrates that there was a lack of adequate checks and balances, and that we need a lot more checks and balances to be put into place so that something like this never occurs again.
Mm. So let me ask you sort of the most basic question, and this will be my final question. In your view, is there ever a role for an APA-sanctioned psychiatrist to participate in what's been called enhanced interrogation techniques, what most people would call torture?
In my personal opinion, there is never a role for a psychologist to be involved in abusive or enhanced interrogation techniques. And I feel that very strongly, and I do believe that our APA and our council needs to have a very clear policy statement to that effect.
All right. Nadine Kaslow is past president of the American Psychological Association and was part of the committee in charge of the independent review of the APA's ethics guidelines. Nadine Kaslow, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
We now turn to the person who helped start this firestorm. Nathaniel Raymond is a human rights investigator. He's also the co-author of the report, All the President's Psychologists, the American Psychological Association's Secret Complicity with the White House and U.S. Intelligence Community in Support of the CIA's Enhanced Interrogation Program. Welcome back to the program, Nathaniel Raymond.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. We also want to hear from you, listeners, what you think about this situation, especially if you are a psychologist. What does this mean for your profession if you go to see a psychologist? What's your take on the practice now? You can call us at 800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And I want to make sure that I'm clear here that not every psychologist is a member of the APA. Nathaniel Raymond, you were on Radio Boston in May, and you seemed somewhat hopeful that this independent review would bring to light the APA's tainted past. Is this report what you expected?
Well, to quote Winston Churchill, this isn't the beginning of the end, but it's the end of the beginning. The Hoffman Report was, I think, and will be seen as one of the most important reports in terms of accountability for the United States government's use of torture, even ranking with or beyond the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence report. It was an incredible investigative act, but that said, it asks as many questions as it answers. And I want to take issue with one thing Dr. Kaslow said. She said it was a small group within the APA. Yes, it may have been a small group. It was called the entire leadership.
I also
over
want to,
years.
You pointed out also in another journal that this is the single greatest health professional ethics scandal of the 21st century. The greatest?
Yes. Without a doubt, hands down, no question, blue ribbon winner in terms of medical ethics scandals, and it ranks in American history alongside Tuskegee as probably one of the worst.
You know, we heard Anthony speaking also about Stephen Behnke, who was the former ethics director at the APA, and he left before this report came out. The report says that though a former APA board member said the ethics office, which he ran, was very much involved in, quote, protecting the public, Behnke said during an interview with the independent reviewers that the role of the ethics office is not protection of the public, and that, you know, that protection is a function for state licensing boards. So that sounds contrary to the ethics that we have to stand up to with an ombudsman, you know, as journalists and other medical groups, I imagine. For you, what's your take on protecting the public? Was that the role of the ethics office?
Absolutely. If it's not that, then what are they there for? The fact of the matter is that what Dr. Behnke did there is an old classic two-step approach to dodging the question. What he didn't say is that the APA ethics code is the basis of state licensure verbatim in over 30-plus state ethics codes. And so weakening the APA ethics code has the cascade effect of automatically weakening all state licensure. And let me be very clear here. Why was the APA so important to the intelligence community in trying to protect the Bush administration from torture charges? It was important because that state license is required in order to be a contractor or to serve in the U.S. military or the CIA. If the state licensure regulations that are directly influenced by the APA ethics code prohibited this type of involvement, it could have sunk the entire torture program and the legal defense against it. The stakes were as high as they get for the Bush administration, and that's why the APA was absolutely crucial.
Nathaniel Raymond is joining us here on Radio Boston from New Haven, Connecticut. He's director of the Signal Program on Human Security and Technology at the Harvard Humanitarian Initiative. He also has authored a report about this Hoffman report we've been talking about, come out on the APA and its involvement with the Defense Department. We want to hear from you in the next few minutes as well. Our number today, 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Find us on Twitter at Radio Boston. What's your take on this ethical dilemma? Carl is calling from Newton Highlands, who I understand is a psychiatrist, which is different, especially in this case, from a psychologist. Hello, Carl. Carl?
Yes?
Good to hear you. Can you? We understand that you are a psychiatrist, and of course the, the APA in this case does not refer to your association. What's your comment?
Oh, am I now with the producer?
Nope, you're on the air, sir.
Oh, okay.
That's okay. Go ahead.
Well, twofold. One is that the APA is a confusing designation because it can refer both to the American Psychological Association and the American Psychiatric Association. And your host inadvertently made the same mistake as the New York Times did earlier this week when they referred to the participation of psychiatrists in this program, which never happened. In fact, psychiatrists rejected participation based on ethical grounds as physicians. I have no inside knowledge of what made the psychologists think differently about it.
Can you say more about that medical ethic, meaning the do no harm? Your association has a do no harm ethic, and Nathaniel Raymond, please jump in on the differentiation here. Why doesn't the psychological association have that as well? Why isn't that just inherent?
Well, the key thing in the case of psychologists is that you're talking about two types of professionals. One is clinical professionals, therapists, school psychologists, that sort of psychologist. And then on the other side, you have research psychologists who are not providing direct assistance to a patient, direct services. And so there's this schism between what we would call the clinical and operational schism. And what happened here is that the APA basically watered down the clinical aspects, took out the international law, and created something that allowed this operational aspect that was operating under the Bush administration's interpretation of international law to have absolutely no do-no-harm requirement. And in fact, it was decided by what U.S. interpretation of the law was. That could not have happened in the same way in psychiatric and medical ethics by the other APA. And they took a strong stand in 2006, prohibiting the involvement of all their members in the program and in all interrogations.
Nathaniel Raymond, I just want to ask you, I'm not jumping to the bottom line here, but this big report, this more than 500-page report, names a lot of people, the Hoffman Report I'm referring to. It's quite a damning assessment of a very controversial period for the U.S. What do you think is going to be the outcome after this? And you know, importantly, too, what do you, as an investigator and a human rights investigator, want to be the outcome?
Well, I think what needs to happen is threefold. One is that the American Psychological Association has taken some steps, but they haven't taken enough. Right now, Barry Anton, a professor at University of Puget Sound, the current president, is directly implicated in this report. In approximately 2 weeks' time, he's going to address the membership in Toronto, and he's still in office. He is shown to have been a direct co-conspirator in this collusion. Why does he still have his job? Meanwhile, Natalie Guilfoyle, the general counsel of the APA, is implicated in the report. She has not been fired. So I think you're going to have to see additional action from the APA, including a much better apology than their first whack at it in the first 24 to 48 hours, which did not address really the severity of the crisis, and more apologized for the report's findings than what the APA did. I think the second thing is that academic institutions, and I think there's going to be news on this very, very soon, are going to start to take action against those named in the report far beyond what the APA is doing. And that means clinical psychologists and academic appointees, I think, are going to be in for a tough couple weeks if they were implicated in this report. Lastly, I think you're going to see, hopefully, potential action by the Congress and by the United States government if the FBI does not act. Then that is just another example of the effort by the U.S. government to sweep this entire period under the rug.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Finish.
Oh, please go ahead.
Well, there's some fine language here that you know, if you don't really look at this report closely, it's very easy to miss it, I think. The investigation said that the investigators did not find evidence that APA officials knew about an enhanced interrogation program while they were working with the DOD. And that relationship was an open relationship. The APA approved working with the DOD. What the report did find, and correct me if I don't have this correct, is that APA officials suspected that abusive interrogations had occurred. So I would like to hear, as I'm sure you would like to hear, is why didn't they speak out? And was that their job to speak up?
You're hitting the nail right on the head here. In the first part of the report, which is actually about the CIA, not the DOD, there's evidence that many former senior APA officials, including at least two presidents, were serving in oversight roles in the basically the standards board for the element of the CIA that was running the program. And they stopped internal efforts by one psychologist, CIA psychologist Terrence DeMay, as early as 2003 to end Mitchell and Jessen's ability to continue in the program. So there's a whole history here that I think Hoffman got into but didn't get as far as is needed. And that's where law enforcement has to come in on the CIA part. I think that this they didn't know there was an EIT program, an enhanced interrogation techniques program going on, just flies in the face of the evidence at the time. The actions of the APA occurred after the black sites were known publicly, after Abu Ghraib had happened, and after the involvement of behavioral science consultants at Guantanamo was known. Mm. The point is that Hoffman has gotten us first down, but the touchdown is only going to come from meaningful accountability in the form of law enforcement and congressional hearings with the access and the clearance to go where the story goes. And it's not just DOD, it's not just CIA, it's the White House.
Listeners, Hoffman is the name of the report, named after a Chicago lawyer, I believe, on the American Psychological Association's interactions with the DOD, which was an open relationship, but some collusion going on there, which we're talking about with Nathaniel Raymond. We have David on the line from Newton, Massachusetts. David, thanks for calling in today.
Oh, good afternoon. Well, I was a psychiatrist at the CIA during this time, and along with other psychiatrists, I declined. I was in a position where I could have left the CIA and found other employment. I told them that it was wrong, and so did other psychiatrists. It's important to note that no psychiatrists at the CIA participated, and every report has said so. The Physicians for Social Responsibility said that. And all the subsequent reports have said that.
David, just be clear, when you say you declined from what? Just to be very clear.
To be involved with any detainee, with bringing psychiatric expertise to the interrogation of any detainee.
I just want to step in here and
Please say,
David, thank you for calling in today. On my side, first-time caller, long-time listener, your colleague, Andy Morgan, is a psychiatrist from, at one point, Yale, is noted in the report as having brought concerns about the ethics of Mitchell and Jessen after the efforts of Dr. DeMay inside CIA, according to the Hoffman report, were stopped. Dr. Morgan brought those complaints to the APA to ask for APA in 2004, including Dr. Banky, to evaluate Mitchell and Jessen's actions, the psychologists who designed and led the program in reference to the APA ethics code, and the APA declined. So I just want to say that there is evidence of officers in Office of Medical Services, such as yourself, raising these concerns, and thank you.
David, thanks for your call. Nathaniel Raymond, we just have a couple of minutes left. Does this report or is there anything can ensure that this kind of relationship between doctors and psychologists and medical officials won't continue to be the case?
Well, at the end of the day, if you are following medical ethics and international law, nothing that happened here could be allowed. Bringing the APA clearly, squarely in line with accepted professional medical ethics and international law will prohibit these actions, at least as far as the ethics code. But the only thing that's really going to do it is, at the end of the day, it's called accountability. And this wasn't a whoopsie doodle. This wasn't a debate. This was the aiding and abetting of torture, which wasn't just about coercion. It caused homicide. It caused the dragnet of in Iraq of thousands of people who were subjected to immense brutality, far beyond what was in the, quote, enhanced interrogation techniques. At the end of the day, we don't even know how bad it was. And we're not going to know until we move beyond how do we write our ethics code alone to how do we hold people accountable for violations of the law.
And we haven't discussed the specifics of what kind of guidelines were suggested. And some of that we don't know, nor will we know. I appreciate your time, Nathaniel Raymond, a human rights investigator, also director of the Signal Program on Human Security and Technology at Harvard. Thank you so much today.
Thank you.
Stay with us. Coming up, it's never too late to live the dream. A Boston Globe rock critic lays down her pen and picks up a guitar. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Jill Kaufman. This is Radio Boston.